Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in once again to Spiritual Insights. I'm very excited about this segment because, in keeping with the theme that we've set for January of 2014, honoring your resolution to change your life, I wanted to revisit our November 19th segment with James Goy Jr., who is the author of How to Attract Money Using Mind Power. We had a very powerful, insightful conversation, and money is in the foreground of most of our minds at the moment at differing levels of success and abundance, but I wanted to work with James once again and try to get us all on the same page, getting these concepts into our awareness, and then take it a little deeper this time in the conversation. So it's my pleasure to welcome back to the show James Goy Jr. James, so nice to talk to you again.
Thank you, Charlotte. Same here.
And the last segment that we had, I got such rave reviews about. I felt so good about it. Did you get the same?
Yes, and I just, as you know, listened back to it yesterday, and I think it was a great segment.
Yes, I thought it had a terrific flow, and we discussed a lot of specific things, and I want to just touch briefly on the concepts that we talked about. If any of the listeners, if you would like to go back to that segment, whether you're revisiting it or hearing it for the first time, we discussed our beliefs and how they tie into our experience with money, desire, right livelihood, and our self-image. So very in-depth information is contained in that segment. And here we'll touch on a few of those things, and then we'll continue and go into deeper layers. But I wanted to first revisit, James, on how you put the book together and what you aspired for it to be and how you did it. And what you did was you made it very simple, very concise, and you have covered so many different subjects and wove them in together in 20 chapters, covering many different aspects of our relationship with money. But each chapter is basically the same, so digestible, wherein you provide a quote, and you took information from a variety of reliable sources, from 160 sources. You provided insightful commentary, and then you provided simple steps wherein we can all start to apply these to our lives. And what I did is I grabbed an excerpt from that segment where you talked about the book. Do you mind if I play that?
Oh, certainly.
Okay.
Money is one of the universal things that people have problems with, even people that don't know anything about metaphysics, but when they're trying to apply metaphysics or what they term the law of attraction or whatever, people have a problem with money. So I thought, well, let me tailor a book specifically to that, because if people have enough money, then they can survive, then they can branch out, they can do other things, they can have the stress, the peace of mind, the wherewithal, the resources to pursue other spiritual avenues and to succeed and strive and thrive in life. But I wanted to make it a book like no other book, and I really think I've done that. My book, I believe it's the most concise and usable book of its kind. It's not full of all kinds of stories you have to wade through. It's written as a manual. It's very concise, as you know. It's metered. You know, there's the same exact number of pages and sections in each chapter, and you have your concepts in council, then you have your simple steps, which are very simple things people can do, making lists, making 3x5 cards, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I really break it down, and then all of the quotes I have from you know, I had hundreds of quotes to whittle down from, but I have 160 quotes from 160 separate books and separate authors. No author is repeated either mm-hmm. in here. And it just, even if you've never, you don't know anything about this subject, you can sit down, or metaphysics at all, you can sit down, read this book in one or two sittings, and you'll never be the same when you come out the other end, because you will absolutely know that you are having a profound effect on your life in general, but in particular on your finances, and that you are doing it to yourself, for good or for bad, every single day by your thoughts, your feelings, and the images that you allow to dwell within your mind. And once you get that down, you'll never forget that lesson, and you will be empowered to attract a lot more money into your life.
Wow. Very eloquent. Mm.
Thank you.
So in a nutshell, you basically described how you put the book together, and it really is impactful because it's simplistic. And that's where that conversation, that's what kicked off that conversation where I grabbed the excerpt.
Mm-hmm.
So in our new conversation, I'd like to take things a little deeper, and we'd love to have calls from the listeners should you have any questions, comments, or even stories you'd like to share if you have read James's book or if you understand the law of energy and the laws of money and you have a success story you'd like to share. We'd love to hear that too. We will take calls later in the show, and the number to call is area code 347-934-0751, and press 1 to get into the queue to talk to us, okay? So where we wanted to go was kind of start with our intuition. What would you like to say to the audience with regard to incorporating intuition into your relationship with money and your experience with it?
Well, intuition is a very important part of this process, the way I use it. And I think it's in this actual, you know, subject of attracting and whatnot, it's a little bit neglected, in my opinion. Now, mind power, in the beginning stages of application, is all about relaying messages to our subconscious mind and thus the universe about what we want. In other words, we're programming into our subconscious minds what it is that we want, and the universal subconscious, of course, is being programmed with that same information. And so in the beginning stages, it's all about, basically, to simplify it, telling the universe what we want, what it is, what it looks like, how much
right.
it weighs, and dollar figures or whatever it is. So the beginning stages, we're telling the universe what we want. Later, our subconscious mind and universe, and later in the process, they start to tell us what we need to do to get what we programmed in that we want. And this, you know, this is a wonderful part of mind power and attracting and manifestation, techniques, is that a lot of what will happen to bring about what we're trying to create will happen outside of our direct control, physical control, and actually outside of our knowledge many times. In other words, there are things going on at a distance. People are thinking certain ways. They're feeling certain ways. They're doing certain things. Events and circumstances are gelling in certain ways. And it's all coming around to helping fulfill the vision and the blueprint that we have imprinted on the substance, the energy substance of the universal consciousness or energy dimension. And so first we tell the universe what it is that we want. Then the universe and, of course, subconscious mind, it's kind of one unit in its operation,
mm-hmm.
starts to tell us what we need to do. What phone call do we need to make? What book do we need to read or whatever? It will guide us in very unassuming ways. And that's why, you know, a lot of people receive intuitive guidance, but they don't recognize it for what it is. They just think it's their own thought. And a lot of times they don't follow it through because it doesn't make sense. You see, when we figure things out through conscious mind, we have pros and cons, you know, and reasons why we should, and here's what will happen if we don't. But it's all conscious mind. And in our conscious mind, we can only know so much. When we get intuitive promptings, they are coming from a higher place. And a lot of times in our conscious minds, we cannot make the connections to why this would be good. Or we might even think it doesn't make sense or it could be harmful. Like, you know, I'm not going down there at night, you know, because it's dark or whatever.
Right.
Yet there's a connection waiting for us in this place we're having this prompting to going. So we need to develop, to get to the highest levels of being able to work the process of attracting and manifesting through mind power, and specifically to doing our part, because there are certain connections we physically have to make or verbally or whatever. That's where we need to really develop our intuition. And you develop it by being aware of its presence, by being open to it and looking for it, and then by acting on it. And that's where the real power starts to build. When you act, when you routinely act on your intuition, even though the things you're doing don't make sense to you or you don't understand how they can be helpful, you will find your intuition get more and more powerful. And the more you have that experience, then the more you come to trust it. So the universe can do its part, you know, very easily, because that's what it does. When you start doing your part, that's the missing link usually for people in their lives and in their manifesting the desired life. They're not doing their part. That's very, it's as simple as that. And so when you start doing that in all ways, physical and mental and intuitional, then that's the whole package, and that's when you become a very proficient mind power practitioner who routinely attracts to themselves what they need and want, including money, but of course not limited to money.
Certainly not. It can be people who can help you get there. It can be an inspiring quote. It can be going onto the internet and finding a radio show with two very nice people just talking about it, right?
Exactly. Now we're talking. Now we're cooking.
Okay.
That's exactly it. You know, we just don't know what it's going to be. Unless we walk down that road we're being guided to walk down, we don't know what's at the other end or what's through that door we're being prompted to walk through.
Right. And I would add that not consciously understanding where that intuitive hit is taking you should not allow you to, or should not disallow you to have a sense of wonder about where it's taking you. Because when you have that sense of wonder, it is accompanied by a sense of openness, and that is the openness you were speaking about in, say, the step two, be aware, be open to it, and then when you're open to it, more will come to you. Because that, in that respect, picture your arms, putting your arms up, and you're like an open funnel, and saying, a good question to ask is, how easy can it be and how good can it get, and how beautiful can the process play out so that I'm enjoying my life instead of struggling? And then all of this, when we put it into place and you become a proficient mind power practitioner, I love that phrase, you are demonstrating the connectedness of the universe, and you are actually going with the flow that so many metaphysicians and spiritual teachers speak about. This is going with the flow. It's remaining connected, remaining open, and then acting upon the intuition that you get. But like you said, the more you do it, the more you recognize, and the more you will be able to connect the dots and create that you want, especially, but not, like you said, not limited to, with regard to money, abundance, and prosperity, and how you get your money. Would you like to amplify that in any way?
Right. It's a definite sense of wonder and openness, like you say. It's a feeling of excitement, and that excitement just pulls you forward. Not only that, but it's part of the creative process, because you're thinking of and expecting, you're coming to expect more and more good things. abundance and you know, peace and harmony and all of these things. So that is actually part of the creative process. And as we move through it, it almost in the beginning, it's like a process that we do. It's like something we do. It's a technique or something that we apply. But as you start to get further into this, and I'm talking, you know, months and years and even decades down the road, it becomes not something that you consciously have to do so much. It becomes more of something that you naturally do as a consequence of what you've become, because you change in this process. Mm-hmm. In the beginning stages, people are trying to stay positive, and they're trying to think about what they want more than what they don't want, and they're trying to think and feel and image in ways so that they'll bring about what they want. Well, there's a certain effort involved in that, because it has to be consciously decided upon, because it's counter to what we've been doing for 30, 40, 50, 60 years before. Into the process further, it becomes so natural that we don't even realize that we're doing it. For many people, and I know some of them, a positive thought is an anomaly. It's like, where did that come from? Because their natural state is pessimistic and dark. And when you can get to where your natural state is optimistic, and where your natural state is being in flow with intuition and following it as just routinely, without even having to think about it, it's just because it's what you do, it's what you've become, because you trust it so much that you don't question it, and you don't even think of it as intuition anymore. It's just a process that you are in. And your results get greater and greater over time, and your effort mm-hmm. becomes less and less. It's a wonderful process.
It is. It is. Having experienced it, I can say that I'd much rather live this way than in the chaos of the awareness I had in my 20s of never knowing where something was going to come from, or especially the big question, and we'll talk about this later in the show, but why do I have to do this just to make a living? Like, why do I have to do the specific task, or, you know, or the task involved in a job, but feeling the way I feel about doing it, especially when you don't really like what you're doing. So we'll talk about that at a much deeper level. But I'd like to, you know, we're telling everybody, okay, when you open up your intuition and you're open to the signs, and there's a myriad of ways that these messages can reach you, whether it's through written word, newspapers, the news, a person, a coworker, a stranger that you meet who may say something that inspires you to go look something up, and that leads you to the next step and the step after that. But the place where we really need to start that we never really got to delve into is our environment. So what I'd like to do is read the quote that you use in your chapter on environment, which is chapter 12 in the book. May I read that?
Yes, certainly.
Okay. This is from Don Hudson, Chris Crouch, and George Lucas, who apparently wrote The Contented Achiever, How to Get What You Want and Love What You Get, 2001. And it states, everyone must be accountable for creating their own personal environment for success. As a successful person matures, they take more and more responsibility for their environment. So, of course, I've spoken on this in several segments on a variety of levels, and James, I think if my audience hears me say one more time how crucial it is to declutter their homes and their environments and their refrigerators, I think their heads will explode. So instead, I'd like to go a few levels deeper, and I'd like to ask you, from your perspective, let's discuss the reciprocal nature of our relationship with our environment. For instance, like, we have an energetic relationship with everything we own, including mementos and things we hold on to that might prove useful in the future. What are your thoughts on that relationship?
One thing I want to do, I want to read one more quote. I was just looking through them briefly again, and because I have you know, a bunch of quotes in each chapter. And this is from Harriet Luella McCollum, What Makes a Master, 1932, and she said, there are two classes of folks in the world, those who will be trained by environment and those who train environment. So that's a big crux of this, for people to realize how far-reaching this is. I mean, your environment is molding you and basically determining your life unless you take charge of the process. You know, the one is going to rule, and it's either going to be the environment or the individual within the environment. And when the individual within the environment starts to rule, then they are not only able to function better, more efficiently within their environment, but they are able to change their environment, to develop it, to move from environment to environment, and not to be stuck, for instance, in an environment, let's say a job, a relationship, or whatever, when many people get stuck for years on end or even an entire lifetime in a place that they don't want to be. And it is all, as you say, an energetic connection. It's all consciousness. I mean, what we think of as physical, we know now is in science that it's energy. It's not really physical. When you look down to the tiniest particles of physical matter, there's actually nothing there. There is nothing
right.
physical there. So we're in a field of consciousness, and there are energetic associations and movements of energy, which basically you could look at it as consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so we become attached to things within our environment, both negatively and positively, both because they, and it can be people, things, places,
mm-hmm.
structures, you know, buildings, both because we feel empowered by them or because we feel disempowered yet trapped by them. And when we start to get more of a handle on these associations and recognize them and ferret out and identify really what is helping us move in the direction we want to move, what is aiding us in accomplishing what we want to accomplish, and what is holding us back. When we first can come to identify those honestly, and, you know, from a higher place, not from an emotional standpoint, but stepping back and saying, okay, what does this mean? I feel this, you know, but what's behind this? And is this serving me? Is this holding me back? Is it draining my energy? Makes me feel good, but it could be draining my energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it feels good to get drunk, but you're certainly not being empowered by it. You're not getting healthier. You're not gaining any real energy. It's actually costing you energy. And it's the same thing with things in our environment. But remember, our environment is twofold. It's inner and outer. Our outer environment is everything we see, taste, touch, you know, hear, we think of as the world, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And our inner environment is our perception of what that is or what we think it means or what's going on within our own minds. And our minds create our environment. They attract us to and draw us to environments which are more conducive to the way we're thinking. And they environments then also reinforce those thoughts. So it can become a closed loop, and that's why so many people feel trapped in their environment. And an environment can be anything. It can be your home, a relationship, work, your church, or whatever. Each of these is its own almost dimension of consciousness that people have created. And so it's about, you know, mind power is about taking control of your thoughts. Your thoughts are having a profound effect on your environment, and your environment is having a profound effect on your thoughts and feelings, of course. And
mm-hmm.
so we cannot become, get to the higher levels of proficiency in applying mind power without addressing this issue of environment, because it's that important.
Hmm. Would you call that an effective co-creator? It just popped into my head for some reason.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I just heard it very loud in my head. That makes you
mm-hmm.
an effective co-creator. Somebody must have had to hear that. That's a great phrase. I love it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Go. Please continue.
Yeah, so you become an effective co-creator within the environments that you have for whatever reason moved into. Now, if you look at it a little deeper, what we find is that everybody is a co-creator, and they are actually effective because they are having a lot of effect, but they're not effective in the sense of actually getting what they want. And therein lies the problem, because the process is the process. How we think, how we feel, what we believe, what we expect, the images we hold in our minds, all of this, you know, all of these ingredients go into the manifestation stew, you know, and that's what makes our dinner. And then we have to sit down and eat it. And so when we, and that's whether or not we're aware of the process or how it works. It's still working absolutely within our lives, even if it's the outside world that's giving us all our programs. We're accepting them, so they become ours. It's as if we, you know, created them, and the effect is the same. But when we understand the process, we're liberated, because then we can see how we can see the connection between how we are, how we think, how we feel, how we act, what we say, all of these things, how we routinely, you know, speak in our unguarded moments. When we actually see that, wow, all of that has created what is in front of me now, then the next step is to, you automatically understand, well, if that's true, then how I am today is going to create tomorrow. How I am this year is going to create next year. And then any intelligent person would want to basically have more success in their lives, which we can define as getting more of what you want and less of what you don't want, as long as it doesn't impinge on anyone else's right or hurt any other people. Any intelligent person, it's just ingrained and a natural part of human being to want to better their circumstances. We're not beasts of the field, you know. We are thinking, feeling, you know, beings that are just seem to be built to grow and strive and learn and accomplish. Now, a lot of people will say, well, that's a terrible thing because look at what we've done with it. And I have to agree with that. It is a terrible thing if used wrongly. It's a terrible power. You know, it's a fearsome, awesome, frightful power when used by people who are out for power and gain and all of this at the expense of other people.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's like power from hell. But when we use it properly to advance ourselves as well as others in positive ways, then it's a power straight from heaven. The process is basically the same, whether we're understanding it or not, because people can be good-hearted or bad-hearted, creating harmony and peace and abundance for people, or not, creating the opposites, whether or not they know anything about mind power or metaphysics. It's all the same process, whether
Absolutely.
It's for good or for bad, and whether it's conscious or unconsciously applied.
Right.
And so it's all about understanding the basic mechanisms involved and then starting to taper or tailor our actions, mental and physical, in line with so that we get more of what we want. It's just a very simple process. And we make the world a better place in the process. We grow in the process. We become so much more than we were when we started, and we help to lift others along the way.
And that is pretty largely our function on this planet. Beautifully said. Well, I want to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we're going to continue where we left off, okay?
Okay, sounds great.
All right. We'll be right back after these messages.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. the odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Explore new areas of interest, expand your knowledge, and gain clarity about your life's purpose at the Ocala Enter Center. Affectionately known as OIC, the Ocala Enter Center, just 2 blocks south of Town Square, offers workshops, classes, healing meditations, and special events for the Ocala, Gainesville, and Central Florida spiritual community. Check out our calendar of events at ocalaentercenter.com. And if you're looking for a place for your next workshop or seminars, go to ocalaentercenter.com and give Jean a call.
Welcome back, everybody. We are here with James Goy Jr. If you are just tuning into the show, James is the author of How to Attract Money Using Mind Power. Fabulous book, very simple to read and follow and apply these concepts to your life to increase your levels of abundance, but more important, happiness with regard to our relationship with money and our experiences with it. So welcome to the show if you're just tuning in. And James, I wanted to... In picking up where we left off, I wanted to move on to the idea that it might be on a lot of the listeners' minds. And I think that perhaps let's all think back to when we first entered the work world after graduating from high school or at whatever point. I think we began with the best intentions. I think we thought, I'm going to earn a living for myself and I'm going to be happy. And then things happen that we're not quite satisfied with. And it starts to feel as if we're living in a pinball machine where life is kind of batting you around. Does that image make sense to you in your mind?
Yes, that's what a lot of people experience. But many people make the mistake of thinking that it's when people are failing in life or not getting ahead or not accomplishing what they want to accomplish. If we're doing it in a healthy way, accomplishment brings a lot of internal reward and happiness. It really does. But, you know, the stories of people who are extremely rich, extremely powerful, extremely successful in this field or that field, and yet who are very dysfunctional or sad or, mentally debilitated, people commit suicide or leave their professions because of the stress of it. And what we find is that, what I find is that we actually carry our happiness with us. And it doesn't really depend on what's outside of us. So if we're looking for happiness outside, we're not going to find it if we don't already have it. Because each accomplishment, first of all, I can state this, is that no matter, and anyone who's accomplished things that they thought were going to be so great or change their life forever or, just be the end-all, they find out that it's not quite that when they get it. In other words, if somebody's always wanted to be a millionaire and then they get $1 million, it doesn't change things the way they thought it would. And everything we accomplish carries its own baggage with us. There's things we didn't anticipate. There's a cost. Everything comes with a cost, and sometimes we're not happy with that cost, with the process of paying that. So it behooves us to realize that if our goal is to, let's say, get $1 million, well, that's what we're getting. We're getting $1 million. We're getting some more freedom of movement and of our time and whatever, if we do it right. But we're not going to get happiness because we truly can't buy happiness with even $100 million. In fact, the more unstable we are in our happiness process or in our mental state in general, the more unstable we will become with the more that we have, because money actually amplifies what we already are. And you can see this when bad people get money. They use it to have power over other people and to take advantage even more. When good people have money, they use it to bless others and to help in individuals or organizations or whatever. So money actually enables us to be so much more of what we already are, but money doesn't change us. And so if we are happy, we can become increasingly so in an expanded way just because we can express so much more those things that make us happy. But if we are fearful and negative and malevolent people, then we will be able to express those features and those tendencies even more, and this will actually tend to drive us deeper in the darkness. And even, you know, you look at lottery winners, way more than half of them within a few years, it depends on who you listen to, but within 3 to 5 years, they have lost all of the money.
Yes.
Very often they are worse off than they were, like they're further in debt now or whatever. And in the process, they've also lost or destroyed or had destroyed many of their relationships with friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
So they end up, you know, literally wishing they had never won the lottery because the lottery ruined their lives. Well, it wasn't the lottery. It wasn't the money. It was how they handled it.
Absolutely.
They weren't ready for it, and they couldn't handle it, and they didn't handle it. And the proof is that it didn't stay. So, you know, first and foremost, we must develop ourselves. As an outgrowth of that, then we can develop our circumstances and conditions, be they financial or otherwise. And, of course, I specialize in financial, and one reason I do that is because in this physical world, it is the magic grease, you know, that can get anything else, you know, working. I mean, just think, if a person, and people do it all the time, if a person wins $100 million in the lottery, I mean, all of a sudden, they don't have to think and plan and dream and visualize a perfect house. They just look at what's on the market, and they plunk down $1 million or $5 million cash, and they buy their dream home, basically.
And move all their rotten baggage right into it.
Right. They bring their bugs.
They bring
with
all
them.
That. The buzz, the baggage, and the alimony payment contract, because, as I say in my classes and workshops, usually the first thing someone does is, you know, when they win the lottery, is go find themselves a new spouse. And all of these horrible things come to light. I explain to my students that that is a huge, if we're talking about energy, and I want to impress upon the listeners, when you're wishing for something and setting a goal, you have to go about it in a step-by-step process. You cannot, and I will ask James about this in a few minutes, you cannot expect to be one way one day and totally different the next. You have to, in a step-by-step process, expand your awareness, your consciousness, and your energy field in a process of energetic preparedness in order to get the things you want. So if you do want large amounts of money, you have to kind of stretch the muscle of your awareness and your consciousness and your self-worthiness, you know, that type of stuff, to accommodate that when that happens. And the problem with lottery winners is here is somebody who is in one financial situation, and suddenly it's like, put it this way, you can touch a light switch with your wet hand, and you can get a little bit of a shock. Your body can handle that amount of electricity. If you win the lottery, that is like getting hit by a lightning bolt, and it's very difficult to process, and that's why people kind of go off the deep end when that happens, and then they do react badly and ruin their lives. James, anything you want to add to that? I don't want to come into the conversation.
There's a lot of insight in what you say, and I like that phrase, energetic preparedness, because as a whole, lottery winners are not prepared. Now, some are already very well-to-do anyway, so they're more energetically prepared because they are already comfortable with the process of having.
Right.
And the other thing you said was about self-worth, or, you know, we talked about self-image last time, and, you know, it's purported that when Elvis gave his mother a Cadillac –
Yes.
I think it was a pink one. But anyway, when he gave his mother a Cadillac as a gift, she said, "Oh, Elvis," she said, "we're not Cadillac people." So she did not identify with Cadillac. Cadillacs are for Cadillac people, you see, and they were not
yes.
Cadillac people. And so, you know, if a person has been working with, for instance, what we're talking about, the mind power, you know, practices for attracting money and visualizing or affirming or having, you know, large goals and this and that,
mm-hmm.
thinking about what they would do with the money, getting comfortable in that mindset of having a lot, then when it comes, you are more energetically prepared for it. But if you, you know, like years ago, I mean, I remember when I was out in the work world and stuff, and people be buying lottery tickets, and they'd say stuff like, "Well, I know I'll never win, but you know what the heck?"
Now, the universe is going to prove you right there.
Right, and if by some chance, just of how the numbers fall, they do win, those are the ones who lose it.
Mm.
And it almost seems when you step back and you dissect and study their process once they do win, it almost seems like they're hell-bent on giving it all back. Like they are not comfortable where they are because that's never how they've thought of themselves or their circumstances. Or they have worthiness issues like you brought up. And so they will be reckless.
Yes, and they will spend it
mm-hmm.
as if they're turning on a fire hose and then wonder where it all went. But because they can't contain the energy, they get rid of it as fast as possible, thinking that they're acquiring, but they generally have to declare bankruptcy and give up those things that they purchased.
Right.
Yeah, pretty tough circumstances. I would not wish that upon myself. I really would not.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the pieces of advice that I've seen from more than one source of the, you know, financial experts who tell people what to do when they win the lottery, you know, beyond the obvious of, you know, sign your ticket right away, take a photocopy of it and whatever. But they actually advise, as far as the money itself, to not do anything
at first
for like up to a year.
Yes,
just
I agree.
Nothing at all. Get your support system in place to fill in where you don't have the knowledge, you know, accountant, bookkeeper, lawyers, whatever, especially if you have, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars or even, you know.
Oh, they'll be happy
90.
To help you.
Yeah, you have to be careful who you hire.
Absolutely.
Very careful. You should know as much yourself as you can know. But get used to the idea of having all of this money. And also, if there are people in your life who you really do trust, who have proven themselves in the times when you didn't have the money, and you
mm-hmm.
trust their judgment, and you've learned over time, then let people like that help you in your decisions of where to allow that money to flow to eventually once you start letting it flow.
Flow. Mm-hmm.
Because the money is supposed to flow. You're not. It's not just all for you to sock away and be fearful of losing.
No. Nope.
But neither is it for you to start watering weeds and to start
exactly.
giving it out in places where people are going to abuse it,
right.
Cause themselves problems because of it and other people, come
right.
to depend on you or expect that, you know, well, you helped them out of this jam and now they're in another one. And you still have lots of money, so why aren't you helping me now? What's changed?
No, it's a whole new set of problems and different dynamics.
Oh, it's a whole, yes. And it's
yes.
really, I remember one story. The lady was a doctor, and the people at her hospital where she worked, many of them were so resentful and angry and jealous because she was already a doctor. So in their minds, she was already rich. She started getting death threats, death phone calls, this and that. They ended up, her family had to move into a gated community, you know, with security and all of this because they
yeah.
were, you know, actually afraid for their lives. So
that's very sad.
Mm-hmm.
But
and, you know, in
think...
many states, here's one thing, in many states, you cannot be anonymous.
Yeah.
I think there's a few where maybe you can, but you you know, for the most part, it's going to be public record. That's part of the deal. And so it's not like you can just not tell anybody. So you really need to learn, you know, how to handle, and not just the lottery, but windfalls can come from all kinds of places, things you never thought about.
Yeah.
We know, through a friend of mine, I know a homeless person who she told him, she's, you know, very spiritual and psychic and all, and she told him, she said, things are going to change for you. This guy has been living literally under, you know, bushes and stuff for 9 to 10 years. Now, he hasn't really tried to change his lot because he doesn't want to get into the, I mean, he goes out on the desert, you know, and for weeks or even a couple of months recently, all by himself, I mean, living off the land kind of a thing. But she told him, your situation is going to change. You're going to attract abundance to yourself. Well, come to find out, within a year or so of her saying that, his mother died. Well, no one ever thought his mother had any money. And she ended up having all this money socked away. He ended up, and there's three or four, I think there was three children, him being one. Well, no, not that much, but it might as well be for him.
Uh-huh.
Because she gave him $100 one time, and he said, you don't understand. He said, this is like $1 million out here on the street, this $100. You don't understand what you just gave me. But right. It was $150,000.
Okay.
To him, that might as well be $1 million. Money can come to anyone from anywhere at any time in huge amounts. It's not just the lottery. And when we start opening our minds to that, because part of the process of manifesting and attracting is to not is like when you make a compose an affirmation. You never say I have $100,000 from because I made a lot of sales at work. If the goal is $100,000. That's the goal. You don't need to say where it came from because maybe it'll come from your sales, but why limit it to that? By not saying where it's coming, you don't exclude any avenue, like from
mm-hmm.
sales, but you include all possibilities.
Right.
And so, you know, people really need to be, if they hope to have more, they need to come to understand more the wonder of the universe that they are within, that this is all really just a interplay of consciousness.
Yes.
And anything, literally anything, when it comes to monetary considerations, is possible.
Absolutely.
Did you hear the story about the woman who took a sign? I guess she needed some kind of an operation, and she went out at the corner, you know, where the cars have to stop for the lights and whatnot.
Yes.
And she had a sign because she needed $20,000 for an operation. Well, some guy stopped. I guess he got out and talked to her, and he said, well, don't worry. He said, you'll have your money by the end of the week. The guy was a big local, you know, multimillionaire, I guess, businessman. Anyway, it was nothing for him to write this woman a check for $20,000. You think she ever thought she'd go out and in one day attract the entire amount of the operation? No.
But something was in alignment within her brain. Something told her, follow her intuition, and she acted on it, and she went and stood on the corner, probably with lowered expectations, and yet they were exceeded far beyond what she thought would be the limit, which brings me to my next topic. But the universe showed her differently because
mm-hmm.
of following that. So that is wonderful for her. But I want to tap into the majority of circumstances of the people that are tuning into this now. And just to say that, you know, the chances of winning the lottery, they're very slim. Is it possible? Yes, but that ratio is there's quite a gap there. Windfalls are equally unexpected, although we would all hope for one. Until the universe can get that into alignment, we cannot plan on that. So what I'd like to introduce is another term that I coined for one of my Money Mystique workshops, is that in order to really handle the money coming in as the universe responds to our ability to handle it, we want money to come to us in handsome increments. And for most of us, one of the ways that comes to us is in the form of a raise. So for those of us who do work in a company owned by another individual, and we're doing the work and we're earning a paycheck. I would like to address those people, especially those, you know, who did not pick a subject, go to school, and then become what they wanted to be that would make them happy, such as a lawyer or a doctor. And that is fine. However, a little subset of that demographic may have done all those things, taken those steps, and worked really hard to get there, only to find that they really are not satisfied. And I have a very good example of this to tell you. I'd like to play another excerpt and talk about right livelihood. Is that okay?
Certainly.
Okay. So I want to play this clip, and then I want to tell you a story about my new friend John, who was a guest on the show, and what he did to turn his life around. But first, let me go to this clip, and I'll move on to my story. Hang on.
Happens is when you work your right livelihood, when you be what you're supposed to be, when you do what you're here to do, you are working for God. You are working
exactly.
for the universe, and God/universe always pays you. But see, God/universe, see, if you work for the lumber mill, the lumber mill can only pay you from profits from lumber, because that's all they have to work with. When you work for the universe, they can pay you from anywhere through anywhere.
Well, that certainly made a whole lot of sense to me, and it's a perfect fit for what we were just talking about with regard to, you know, realistic expectations. The lumber mill can only pay you what's in its budget to do, but in breaking outside of that and aligning with the universe, much larger things can happen. So that was an excerpt from our segment of November 19th, and we were talking about right livelihood. Where would you like to, what would you like to add to that at this point, James?
Well, regarding what you were saying about people being in jobs at this time, and maybe their increase is going to come in increments through raises or whatever,
bonuses.
Things of that nature,
mm-hmm.
bonuses and things from work.
Right.
And if you are in a job, then here's my advice to you. And I have always had this philosophy even before I got into the Mind Power spiritual studies, which, you know, wasn't very long, a few years. But I always did a really good job. Like I people would always make me a manager. Let's put it that way. I did silkscreen, and before I knew it, I turned around and running the shop because I was the best silkscreener. I was dependable. I was honest.
Okay.
You could depend on me. I would do my job. I learned it well. Telephone sales, you know, same thing. I ended up running rooms and doing all the hiring and firing. Why? Because I was good at what I did. And so my advice to people is, yes, you can get more from your work, but, you know, so many people, they want to get more before they give more. You know, when the boss starts paying me better, then I'll start putting in that extra time, or then I'll really care. You know, right now he's not paying me enough to care. And here's how it works. And people who have gone very far in life quite often started at the very bottom. But here's what they knew, and that is that wherever you are in life, and in this sense we're talking about working life, you want to do the absolute best that you can do in that place. You want to completely fill that position. You want to outgrow the place you're in so that it makes more sense for those above you to give you more responsibility or a wider, you know, reach within the business. You want to be hardworking. You want to be conscientious. You want to be absolutely honest. You want to have your employer's best interests at heart, and increasing the success of your coworkers and the business at large. It's the same as in life. We want to think about giving, and we in fact want to give. One of the best ways to attract more money into your life is to learn how to give money more easily and without so much stress and being fearful, you know, that you're giving something that you're going to turn around later and need and you won't have and all of that, which of course is the process of creating not having it. So if you're in a job right now and that's where you're going to be, and that you see that, if you see that, or even if you don't, as a stepping stone to somewhere else, and you want to be more successful within it, then become better at it. And really, when you look at it, your employer, even if he's the biggest jerk on the planet, is keeping a roof over your head, feeding your children. He is, with his money. See, it's not your money until he gives you the money, then you run him to the store and buy some food. So
right.
Respect that. Respect that, even if people are jerks.
Can I add to that?
That's how you can start to move beyond where you are, is just becoming the best you can be in the place you're at the moment.
Yes. And can I add to that for a moment?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to reinforce what we said earlier, but I'd also like to offer a word of caution. Do not go to work each day with, why do I have to go here? I don't want to be here. And do not sit there all day with this tape rolling around in the back of your mind, I need to get out of here, I need to get out of here, I need to get out of here. Even though you might do good work, you'll do a lot better work if you're focused on what you're doing. But should you have that negative thought running around in your brain, you are programming your experience, the universe will comply, and you will find yourself out of that job in most likely circumstances you are not comfortable with. So unless you're sending out resumes and positively supporting that process, be very careful of your thoughts, because so many people, they're so hurt when they get laid off or fired or the company closes down and did not take steps in a positive direction towards getting out of there, instead of just resenting going there and having to be there and resenting the paycheck. Listen to what James is saying and make these positive steps. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. But James, in the book, in your chapter on right livelihood, which is chapter 17, you state, until you find your right livelihood, your life won't be complete and you won't find lasting peace. I just want to say, most of us are not able to pull the emergency brake, switch gears, and suddenly make a living doing what makes us happiest. What would you suggest we do to get started in the right direction towards finding our right livelihood if we are not close to that just yet?
I would suggest that people start to do the thing, whatever it is. Whatever you think or you have identified that, you know, you would love to be able to be a professional musician, or you'd love to start your own flower shop. You know, you want to be a business owner, or you want to be a writer, or you want to act, or, you know, many of these things we think of where people can have, you know, very high degrees of success, or you want to be involved in humanitarian work. Whatever it is, start to think it, sleep it, dream it, and do it. Start to do it now. We talked about last time when I was on the show how I knew that I had to stop being what I didn't want to be, and I had to start being, I had to stop not being what I was.
Yes.
It was in a convoluted way like that. And the point was that I quit my job and I started writing, because writers write. And so I became the thing before the universe started paying me for that. But, of course, I received money from other sources, so it did actually give me advances for that, what I recognized as large writing advances.
Right.
Because the concept, I think we talked about it last time, do the thing and you'll have the power. Step
right.
out and be what you want to be and share your gift. And don't think about the money. Now, do your mind power work for attracting money, but don't tie the two together. Don't say this has to come from this. You know, many people in many fields that do become extremely successful do so after more or less about 10 years of what can be termed as not successful. The learning, the trying, the failing, the, you know, waiting tables and washing dishes in the meantime kind of a thing. So
right.
you know that you can accomplish what you want to accomplish. Know that the universe wants you there because you can do the most good and serve the greatest good in that place. And if it's, you know, songwriting, then get that guitar out after work and get yourself a piece of paper and write some songs. It doesn't matter that you don't know anything about the business or have any connections. Get a book on the business. Watch YouTube videos. You know, go to open mics in your city or something. Start to meet people. Whatever it is, start to do it now. Yeah, you got to show up for work again tomorrow morning to pay the bills. But
yes.
Don't get in the trap that when the time is right, then I'll do this. You know, when I have more time or when the kids are at school or, when the kids are out of the house, then I'll be able to write. The time will never be right. You need to make the time right. It becomes right by just doing it and doing whatever you have to do, because the universe loves swiftness and boldness and action. And if you don't have that, then you don't have anything, because there's nothing for the universe to grab onto. And you're not grabbing a hold of the universe because you're too wishy-washy. Because if you really, really, really wanted something badly, you would be taking consistent action almost daily towards those ends. And if you're not, then you just don't want it enough. And what is this? This brings us back to chapter one of my book, Desire. If it's not strong enough, nothing's going to happen.
Mm-mm. You're not moving away from that square in any direction. And it reminds me of the movie Sister Act 2 with Whoopi Goldberg telling the young girl Rita, if you wake up in the morning and all you can think about is singing, then you're a singer. And if you wake up in the morning and all you can think about doing is writing, then you're a writer. Write one sentence every day. Take these things and put it in the perspective of your own life. If you want to go save animals, if you whatever you want to do, think about it, focus on it, put your desire, put everything into that, and start to build on that. And then the universe will conspire to find ways to make that happen. It may not happen overnight, but that's okay, because what else have you got to do in the meantime, you know?
Right, right. And a good indication, a good question for people to ask themselves regarding right livelihood or can this be possibly my right livelihood, is would you do it if you were not getting paid for it? And when most creative people, certainly, in business it's different because there's a definite profit motive, but most writers, actors, artists, painters, sculptors would say, would answer, yes, they would do it if they didn't get paid for it. And the proof is that many of them have and did for years on end before they ever did get paid for it, because they had to develop their craft. They had to become good at it. They had to, quote-unquote, pay their dues.
Yes.
And so people say that once you find your right livelihood, you never have to work another day in your life.
True.
And, of course, that's not strictly true. You do work, and there's things in being a writer that you know, it's not about writing. It's more about publicity or whatever, these things you have to learn. But you do it in a state of joy, because you know that it's bringing you closer and closer to your vision for your own life. And
absolutely.
So in that sense, you really never do work another day in your life. I mean, I can't, you know, yesterday I started working at like 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And I was with only a couple of short little breaks for eating or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, just, it was 9:30 last night. And I said, it's 9:30. So it's like 6. The 6 is 12, 13, 14, 15 and a half hours. And I thought, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. I can't wait to get back up tomorrow, because there's so much more I need to do. There's so much more I want to accomplish. It's not that I have to. It's that I want to. So when you have that kind of a drive and you're that committed to the vision of what you're creating, it really isn't work. And it's just a reflection of who you are. You're just being who you are. It's not like you're having to go somewhere and be a street sweeper or a toll collector or a factory worker, you know, for 8 hours.
Yes.
You're being
changing
what you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. You're being what you are 24 hours a day, and the process itself carries you through. And the universe really, you know, this is, people get, like, they understand the concepts, but when you look at how they live their lives, so many people that I know on a personal level, they really don't get it. They really don't have faith in the universe / God. They really don't get it, that if they do the thing, if they give, they will receive. If they start doing what they love to do, they will be enabled to do it more and more, you know, financially or whatever it takes to give them that space. They don't really get it. They're trapped in their own fear of what if this doesn't work out, or what if I'm not successful. You know, I can't spend this on that class to learn this thing, or because what if I need it in 2 months? I don't know where my money's coming from in 2 months. And they don't just step out. And it's always been my experience, and it's my firm, you know, knowledge, belief, and knowing that when we step out and when we look straight ahead and keep the prize in sight and work towards it and do what we need to do, everything else really does work out for you. But it's in a magical way. And then when you try to tell people about it later and you say, well, I did this and then here's what happens. And that's just a coincidence. I heard about some other guy that happened to. They discount it. But when you start stacking them, all of these things up, it just defies the laws of probability that one person would have so many of these so-called coincidences.
It's evidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right, right.
And I want to reiterate what we said the last time, and that is that the process is as important as the goal. You in your career, James, me in mine, the process brings us both so much joy. It's like we see the goal, but we're not worried about it because we're so immersed in the process and the joy that we feel in the moment that 15 and a half hours can pass by. And we can't wait to get up and do it all over again. I've been, you know, I invested numerous hours into this segment alone because I love this topic. And I love the way we dialogue. I invested, you know, quite a bit of time. I don't know how much because I didn't keep a log. It doesn't matter, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. The process is as important as the goal. And when we really realize that it is all about the journey, you know, because we keep getting to places we thought are the end of the road or the big pot of gold, and we find out we've already got another one in sight even before we reach that. We start getting the sense that there's more. But in this process, we actually become less concerned about the clock and the calendar. In other words, we get this sense of just a divine flow, and actually, even though we want these things with sufficient desire to impel us to work towards them every day, we become less and less in a hurry about it because we don't really want anything that's not in its proper time. We want everything to be divinely inspired and divinely ordained, which means that we do our part by making the mold, and we allow the universe / God / subconscious mind all the time and leeway it needs to bring it all about in a perfect way. And when that happens, it's always, in my experience, better than we could have orchestrated. The results are greater. And everybody that was affected in any way, shape, or form by the process benefits. Nobody ever is caused any undue loss for our gain. And that's the kind of, when you start to see that happen in your life over and over and over again, and you have absolute faith that you're going to get to where you're heading or somewhere better, because we need to stay open. We may change our minds. We may learn things that allow us to develop past, you know, and beyond certain things before we even get them. We can determine, well, wait a second, that's really not what I want. When we're in that process, we just become so much more relaxed. We just do what we find our hands to do each day. We follow our intuitive gut instincts and guidance each day, and we know that we're heading to where we need to be. We have an idea of where that's going to be, but we're not attached to it. We don't have a death bond when it has to happen or even what it has to look like. But we know that it's going to be the energetic match of what it is that we want. And if what we think we want is not going to bring us what we think that we want to get from it, we may end up not with that thing, but with another thing that will give us what we were trying to get from the other thing.
And whereas the goal normally, is peace.
Right. Now, normally a person would have to get that other thing to find out that it was an empty shell or just, smoke and mirrors.
Yes.
But the universe already knows that. And if you're seeking security, for instance, in a place that it doesn't or in circumstances that it does not lie, then you may find yourself with different circumstances but having the security that you sought. And so it's a wonderful process, and a lot of it is beyond conscious mind, and that's where we have to have that intuitive interface with the process so that we can get the best results out of it in the shortest amount of time and with the least amount of mistakes. Now, mistakes are a part of the process, and we learn through them, yes, but there's no virtue in just having nothing but mistakes your whole life. You want success
right.
also.
Right.
You know, many people just fail over and over and over. They become habituated to failing. They become to expect it. They become to expect that they'll always have to do things they hate doing. That's just what it is. People work. Work ain't fun, you know, but you got to pay the bills. And that's the mindset. That's how the people they're around think.
Yes.
And so that's what they support. That's what they empower, that kind of a state of mind, which creates their individual state of affairs. We can rise above it. We can absolutely rise above it. And the amazing thing is it's not that hard to do once we know how. We have to learn a little bit about the mechanism of our minds and how we interact with the universal mind, and then we have to start to use some tried and true, what you could call metaphysical or mind power techniques. We have to decide more or less on what it is we want to accomplish or gain, and then when we put those two together, we start to accomplish and gain those things, and we learn in the process, and we become so much more. Again, it's not about... You know, despite the title of my book, people think it's all about the money. It's not all about the money.
Uh-uh.
The money is just a tool. It's a means. But it's what we become in the process of applying the techniques and living in this way. I mean, just what we're talking about right now, living an intuitive life or a conscious mind life. Those two ways of living are night and day. People who live by conscious mind, sometimes things work out. Sometimes they don't. It's kind of a half and half or worse. But people who follow guidance know that more times than not, they end up where they need to be, when they need to be there, and they trust the process. And it is really like night and day. It's like an evolved being and an unevolved being,
mm-hmm.
Almost two different species of human beings, those who live spiritual lives and those who live strictly material lives.
Right. And no matter what side of the fence our dear listeners are on, you may be on one side of the fence where you don't know what your right livelihood is, but you'd like to find out, and someone on the other side of the fence may think they are living their right livelihood, but there's this thought in the back of their mind that keeps popping up and needling at them and bringing a sense of longing with it. And earlier I had said, James, that a new friend of mine, I had him on the show because the story was so fantastic, and I wanted to tell it briefly. His name is John Najjar, and he's the owner of JoyceGarlic.com, and what he does is he makes this fantastic garlic spread. My mouth is starting to water already. This is all natural food. Can you hear? It's ridiculous. Every time I think about this, I get a physical reaction. I tasted the marinara sauce. It's all natural, low sugar, low salt, all that great stuff, no preservatives, absolutely fantastic, all natural food. And so I called him up because these are the types of small businesses I want to promote on the show. And so I asked him, what is your story? And he tells me, well, I grew up in the mountains of Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And he went to school and he moved to the United States and became an aerospace engineer at the Kennedy Space Center. And from there, he couldn't stop thinking about his grandfather's garlic spread. And he couldn't let it go. And so now he built himself a plant. He got the machinery, probably from the money he made as an aerospace engineer, but he's got the machinery and the packaging and the distributors, and now he sells garlic spread, marinara sauce, gift baskets, and all these beautiful, fantastic products, and he's happy. He didn't say that he was totally unhappy being an engineer. That's what he wanted to be since boyhood. But this wouldn't leave him alone, and so he answered the call, set himself on the path, took one step at a time, and that's where he is. And he's completely fulfilled, is the word we were looking for earlier. If it doesn't entail sacrifice and you think it'll bring you fulfillment, then that's what you need to do. Would you agree?
Yes, definitely. And, you know, being an engineer could have been his right livelihood, it likely was, at the time he was doing it. So that's something else we touched on last time, is that your right livelihood can change. And people think that, you know, it's just one thing, and if they're not doing that, then they're failing in life or something. And we all have different positions to fill as we go along. But, you know, the key thing you said was that he's happy. He wasn't unhappy as a engineer, but he is happy doing what he does now and likely would not want to trade it and go back to doing what he was doing.
Right.
And he's making a lot of people happy in the process, isn't he? Listen to the way you talk about his products. You're getting pleasure just thinking about them. You're probably going to hop on the internet again after this interview.
And go order more. Absolutely.
Exactly. So he's sharing the joy. He's living his dream. He's happy with what he's doing, and he's bringing pleasure to other people in the process.
Absolutely, and it brings to mind, like you just said, it might not mean that your right livelihood is one thing that you do exclusively your entire life. He may have been absolutely on the right path the whole way along, and the best example that just flashed into my mind is look at some pop singers who they had their, whether it's 15 minutes or 15 years of fame, but then life transitioned and they went on to real estate or being an agent. They went with the flow and shifted their gears and found something that makes them equally as fulfilled, even though they might not be in the spotlight. And that's what, you know, we all need to do, is really be in tune. There's no way I can only do one thing. That's why I needed this show.
Right. Various entertainers have gone into politics, for instance.
Sonny Bono,
You know, Clint Eastwood. Reagan, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Just as one example, you know. And then there's people who have gone back and forth between music and acting or into business, or someone like Paul Newman, who a large part of what he did was through Newman's own, products, was charitable work,
Yes.
And what he did leading up to that, or even alongside of it, helped to enable him to do that. So, you know, Jesse Ventura, another one, you know, he was a wrestler, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't follow wrestling, but then, you know, he got into politics, became a congressman or whatever.
Governor. He became governor.
Shows you how much I pay attention to politics.
Oh, I don't either, or wrestling. But you make an important point, and that was one point very crucial that I wanted to make before we run out of time. We do have 10 minutes with it. We don't have to fill it if we feel that this energetic exchange is complete. But in answer to a very loud question that people might have on their minds is, you know, how do I get started in finding what my right livelihood is? And tell me if you agree, James, is ask yourself and ask the universe or God or whoever you appeal to, is how can I be of service? Because I do believe strongly that we are largely here. We're all in this together. We're here to help each other. So if you were to ask, how can I be of service, it may come as a surprising answer, and you will be on your way to finding something that you might never have imagined would bring you the fulfillment you're looking for in this lifetime. Do you agree? What would you like to add, James?
I agree, and I would like to add that how can I be of service and enjoy the process of serving? Because any of us can be of service in multitude of ways, many of which we might not really enjoy doing. You know, I mean, I can go and work at an information booth at the convention center, you know, and people come in. Of course, I probably have to shave and cut my hair before I could get hired. But the point is, I don't know that I'd enjoy that, going down there, standing there, spending 8 hours of my day telling people two doors down on the left.
Here's my take on that, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt someone is bound to walk up to that information desk that will say something that will lead to something, whether it is your job to help them or their job to assist you in publishing your next book or increasing the marketing on this. Something will happen. God will make something happen in that instance. Happens to me every single time.
Mm-hmm.
I never turn down an opportunity to help because I know someone's going to walk up that will change my life.
Right. And so it's fine to do other tasks in the process of moving towards your right livelihood, but understanding that it is a stepping stone to something else. I mean, perhaps a particular person was just born to be an information booth lady or man. That's what they love doing. They love talking to people. They love helping people. They love telling people two doors down to the left, you know, hurry up, it starts in 10 minutes. They love that. And it's a half a mile from where they live.
Perfect.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not aspiring to anything else. That is their right livelihood at this time on this planet. Because let's face it, somebody's got to be in that booth.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to be a paramedic and a fireman. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody has to work on power lines or none of us will have power. So there's a place for all of us, and I don't put a president above a floor sweeper, because I have more respect for a floor sweeper who does a good job than for the leader of a country who is a shyster and who's mm-hmm. you know, harming people.
Takes advantage, yes.
Right, because he's not being a good president, but this other guy is being a good floor sweeper. So that's where my respect goes.
Right.
You know, wherever you are in life, you know, fill that position. We go back to that. Fill that position and be the best in that you can be. And then if it's meant to be and if you desire it, the universe will open up larger stages for you to step onto and larger places for you to fill. But you really have to outgrow the places that you're in. To a large degree, you have to master them and be the very good at them to be able to then naturally and in the flow of consciousness with the universe in a growth pattern develop into other things. And that's different than backstabbing and office politics to climb the corporate ladder. You know, two different things. It's just two different ways of being.
Yeah.
And some of the things you get may be the same, money or whatever, but what you become and what you develop into, those are like night and day. So you want to do
Absolutely.
Things that are going to develop you and to make you more, bring you more into the light, thus raising you out of the darkness. And that's really what it is. It's the light of just wakefulness, of being conscious of the creative process and becoming an active positive participant in it, because you can get into black magic or something where you're an active conscious participant in it, but you're not a positive participant. So you become an active conscious positive participant in the process of creation wherever your place to fill at the moment is, and you will be shown that through your intuitive promptings if you learn to develop that part of yourself.
Absolutely.
And so a lot of the guesswork and the agonizing over decisions and all that most people have to go through to figure out what to do, a lot of that is you know, really lessened and decreased and all but dispensed with once you start following intuition, because then you don't have all those questions. You don't have all that agonizing. You just know, follow intuition, follow, you know, your intuitive and inspirational guidance, and you will be, you will turn around a day, a week, a year from now and say, boy, I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I walked that path, because if I didn't, I wouldn't be standing where I am right now.
Absolutely. And this is the year to do it. There's a lot of energy shifts that have taken place over at least the last 5 or 6 years. So if you've been wondering, when is it going to be my time, this is it right now. With all of the shifts, new moons coming up, full moons coming up, see what possibilities and energies resonate with you. For some reason, I felt like I had to say that. But James, it has been absolutely wonderful spending another piece of time with you and just sharing this information. And you speak so eloquently, and I do hope everybody resonates with this information and goes out and takes that first step. Go to his website, get the book. It is How to Attract Money Using Mind Power. Go to jamesgoijjr.com. It's G-O-I is how his last name is spelled. Connect with him on Facebook, facebook.com/jamesgoijjr. Same name for Twitter. He would love to hear your thoughts. I would love to hear your thoughts about the show, your comments. If you have any questions, if there are enough of them, we can possibly do another segment and address some of the specific questions you may have with regard to the things that we spoke about. James, is there anything, do you have a quote you would like to leave our listeners with?
Let's see. I will just flip through the book. I will open up to chapter 20, which is Radiate Financial Increase.
Mm.
And I will look on the page of quotes there. And let's see. What you radiate, this is from E.V. Ingram from Wells of Abundance, 1938. And this writer wrote, what you radiate determines what your manifest world will be. What you radiate determines what your manifest world will be. So I want to bring it back to, it's not so much about what we do, it's more about what we are and what we become. And that really everything we're talking about is how to govern energy and consciousness, because in the end, that's all we have to work with. Everything is energy and consciousness. And so if people just understand that through using these principles, techniques, and adopting these outlooks that we've been talking about today, they will turn themselves into something different than they are today, and they will radiate out better than they've been doing, more positive, and they will attract it back to themselves. And it's all about energy and consciousness. I can't go out and just knock a mountain over through sheer brute force, but I can move mountains with consciousness. We all can, and that's what I want people to know. This is a battle of consciousness. It's a process of consciousness, and anyone can change how they think. Therefore, anyone can improve their lot in life and their finances.
Absolutely. Well, that's all the time we have. Ladies and gentlemen, James Goy Jr., thank you for tuning in, and be at peace.